Radio Prague News. A fierce row has broken out in the Czech government over the Prime Minister's refusal to sign up to the EU fiscal compact. The Czech Finance Ministry has revised its economic growth forecast for 2012 down to 0.2% and is not ruling out a recession. And Prague City Hall will erect an emergency shelter for the city's homeless. A fierce row has broken out in the Czech government over the Prime Minister's refusal to sign up to the EU fiscal compact. Sharp criticism of the decision from the country's foreign minister, who said it would damage Czech interests, elicited a fierce counterattack from Prime Minister Petr Nečas. At a press briefing in Prague on Tuesday evening, Mr. Nečas slammed the foreign minister for what he called a rash and ill-considered remark. He moreover criticized the work of the foreign ministry and advised the foreign minister to devote more time to fulfilling his duties properly. In his own defense, Mr. Nečas said that in Brussels he had acted precisely within the mandate he had received from the center-right cabinet. Mr. Schwarzenberg, who on Tuesday criticized the Prime Minister for harming the Czech Republic's interests, speaking ahead of a four-day official visit to Israel, said he wanted to address the situation upon his return. The Czech Foreign Minister has repeatedly stressed the importance of staying in the European mainstream and recently even threatened to leave the cabinet should the country decide to go its own way. Mr. Schwarzenberg hinted that the real reason behind the country's refusal to sign up to the treaty was discord within the Prime Minister's Civic Democratic Party, whose conservative faction opposed the move. The Czech Republic and Britain were the only two EU members who said they would not be signing the EU fiscal compact, which aims to coordinate budget policy and enforce fiscal discipline across the bloc. The treaty, finalised at Monday's EU summit, spells out the enhanced role of the European Commission in scrutinising national budgets and will empower the European Court of Justice to monitor compliance and impose fines on rule breakers. The Czech Prime Minister said he could not sign up to the treaty for constitutional reasons. He also noted that the treaty held no advantages for Czechs and said the country's Eurosceptic president, Václav Klaus, had already made it clear he would not ratify such an agreement. The Prime Minister has not ruled out that the country might join the treaty sometime in the future. The Czech Finance Ministry has revised its economic growth forecast for 2012 down to 0.2% and is not ruling out a recession. The revised forecast, down from a predicted 1% growth, is based on growing problems in the Eurozone, which are expected to impact the export-dependent Czech economy. The government is expected to draft an amendment to the 2012 budget, which was tailored on a 2.5% growth. Prague City Hall has said it will erect an emergency shelter for the city's homeless in order to provide some protection in the freezing cold weather. 10 homeless people have already died of exposure in the Czech capital this winter, and the worst bout of Arctic weather is still to come. Meteorologists say that nighttime lows at the close of the week could drop to minus 35 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Sarah Barufka. Welcome to the program. Coming up, the Czech government has refused to join the EU's planned fiscal compact. How do blind people use the internet? We find out. And in this week's edition of Czech History, we look at the story of one of the most famous Czech comics, The Rapid Arrows, and that of its creator, Jaroslav Foglar. All that and more coming up, so do stay with us. The Czech government has refused to join the European Union's planned fiscal compact, which paves the way for a closer coordination of fiscal policies within the bloc. At an EU summit in Brussels on Tuesday, Czech Prime Minister Petr Nečas cited ratification issues as the main reason why the country will stay out of the pact, as the only EU member state besides the UK. The Czech refusal has already caused a stir. actor on the domestic scene as Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg said the move would harm the Czech Republic's interests. Jan Richter spoke to Czech Radio's former correspondent in Brussels, Ondřej Hoska, who summed up the reasons Prime Minister Nečas gave to back his decision.
Prime Minister mentioned three reasons. The first one was that he has no mandate to sign the treaty because it's unclear how the ratification process will proceed in the Czech Republic. That means President Václav Klaus publicly declared his unwillingness to sign the treaty, and in order to ratify it, you need in Czech Republic you need the signature of the President of the Republic as well. The second reason was that the countries with their own currencies will not be able to join every euro area summit. That's the second point. And the third reason is that the Czech Republic wanted to stress also the debt criterion in sanctions process. Right now, the prime criteria in European Union in the euro area are based on excessive deficit procedures and so on. And Czech Republic wanted the debt criteria included as well.
Do you think these are the real reasons for the rejection of the fiscal compact by the Czech Prime Minister? Because some of them really don't make that much sense. Some commentators have noted that as Prime Minister it's his responsibility to ratify the treaty, indeed if the government decided to join the fiscal compact. Do you think these are the real reasons, or there might be some underlying Euroscepticism perhaps on the side of the senior coalition Civic Democrats?
I don't understand the reasons 2 and 3. That means the euro area summits and the debt criterion. Poland, Slovakia, other countries had objections, but why Poland and Slovakia are satisfied with euro area summits and debt criterion respectively and Czech Republic is not? That's clearly incomprehensible to me. And the first reason, the ratification process, it's up to constitutional lawyers to say what's based on the constitution or not, but as you've just said, if there is a political will to sign anything, you can clearly sign it. The Czech Republic signed the Treaty of Lisbon, I don't know, or some other treaties, and it was up to the current prime minister to decide. In my view, the real reason is a fear among senior civic democrats of the fear of influence of President Václav Klaus inside the party, and there's probably a fear that President could be able to split the party on this issue.
What does the decision by the Czech government not to join the fiscal compact mean for the Czech Republic?
Right now it's hard to say. The treaty as such is practically useless. There's practically nothing new in the treaty, nothing new which isn't already in the EU legislation. You know, the strengthening of the sanctions has been agreed at the end of last year in other legislation, in the so-called six-pack, and no one raised any eyebrow at that time. And the treaty is useless when it comes to the solving of current crisis. But it could be very dangerous, potentially, not to join this treaty because you have 25 countries ratifying or agreeing to this treaty. And who could guarantee that in 2-3 years these countries won't discuss, won't decide about other issues as well, like, for example, internal market and so on and so on. So to be outside of this club, let's say, could be potentially very dangerous for Czech Republic because we can end, you know, being on the sidelines.
The debate, however, in the Czech Republic about whether or not to join the fiscal compact does not seem to be over. Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg came out with a very strong statement today, saying basically that Prime Minister Nečas's decision harms the interests of the country. Do you think it's likely that the government will reconsider its decision and eventually join the fiscal compact?
First of all, I fully agree with the statement that it harms the interests of the Czech Republic. And from diplomatic sources, I know that it's impossible probably to sign the treaty in March when it will be signed. So eventual reconsideration could come, but later, and the obvious date is March 2013, when the current president has to step down. So I think that we'll see afterwards, because from my point of view, it's highly improbable that the top 09 would cause a fall of the government. It would be for the first time, if I'm not mistaken, that a government in the Czech Republic will fall on a European issue. You know, generally speaking, European Union is not such a big deal, not such a big topic in the Czech Republic, and I can't imagine that top 09 would cause a fall of a government because of some European problem.
Czech Radio's former Brussels correspondent Ondřej Hoska was speaking to our own Jan Richter about the situation in the EU and the Czech Republic refusing to join the fiscal compact. Thank you for the story, Jan. Internet banking, online shopping, Google searches. The internet has made our life much more convenient. And despite the fact that it is a highly visual medium, blind people too are increasingly taking advantage of the internet. But how do they perceive it? And what are some of the difficulties of mastering the World Wide Web for those without eyesight? I met with Michal Jelínek, a blind internet teacher, to find out.
Kontrol dvojí TV, plocha,
Michal Jelínek writes an email at Prague's Tiflo Cabinet, the internet lab of Czech Blind United, an organization that assists blind and visually impaired citizens. Mr. Jelínek, who himself is blind, has been working as an internet instructor for the organization for many years. For anyone with eyesight, it's difficult to imagine how exactly blind people perceive the internet. Like most blind internet users, Michal Jelínek uses a screen reader program that allows him to read the screen via text-to-speech output.
Video hlásící se k hackerskému sdružení Anonymous vyzývá k útoku na sociální síť Facebook.
The program Mr. Jelínek uses is called JAWS, the most widely used software for the blind and visually impaired. It can also transform text on the screen into braille text. However, not all blind internet users own a computer with an expensive, refreshable braille display. What is the hardest aspect of using the internet via a screen reader program?
The most difficult aspect is the fact that internet pages are so overwhelmingly busy, and that there are so many different and sometimes superfluous elements on them. For those who can see, it is easy to skip over the aspects that are not interesting, ads and so on. But for us blind internet users, it takes us a while to sort through all the content and get an understanding of how the page is structured.
Once they have learned how a page is organized, blind internet users can navigate the text portions of it, read articles, or do searches. Only the purely visual parts, like photos, cannot be rendered through screen reader programs. Mr. Jelínek teaches between 5 and 10 courses a week. Despite its challenges, he says the internet opens up a huge realm of advantages for blind people. They can read online versions of newspapers that they otherwise would not be able to read, and even do online shopping.
I mostly buy CDs and books, but sometimes even gifts, clothing, electronics. It is a big advantage for me because I don't like going to regular shops and have the salespeople impose themselves on me. I prefer to shop online at my own leisure, to read the customer reviews. And so for me, online shopping is definitely a big draw.
Still, compared to the mainstream population, only a small part of the blind population has access to the internet. Will this change in the future? I put the question to Mr. Jelínek.
Bude spíš lepší, protože na internetu už
vlastně... I think the situation will improve. The younger generation of blind people, just like with those who aren't visually impaired, start using the internet at an early age and much more intensely. Of course, it will always be more difficult and demanding for them to use the internet than for those who have eyesight, but it is just a question of practicing often and being patient.
Michal Jelinek was explaining how blind people use the internet in this report where I spoke to him last week. Now it's time for today's feature, Czech History. Writer and youth movement activist Jaroslav Foglar left a deep trace in Czech popular culture. Besides more than 25 novels for children, Jaroslav Foglar is also the father of Rychlé šípy, or Rapid Arrows, a legendary comics that has earned a following with generations of Czech readers. Persecuted by the Nazis and the communists, the writer also single-handedly founded his own youth organization, which, in its heyday, had tens of thousands of members across the country. Jan Richter looks at the work of Jaroslav Foglar and his most famous creation.
The heroes of the legendary comics Rychlé šípy, or the Rapid Arrows, first ventured outside the realm of paper in 1941, quite soon after the comics appeared in a Czech youth magazine. The gramophone recordings of some of their adventures were the first in several renderings of the Rapid Arrows that included novels, a TV series, and even a theatre play. The Rapid Arrows are a group of five boys from the city: Mirek Dušín, Jindra Hoyer, Jarka Metelka, Červenáček or Redcap, and Rychlnožka or Speedy. Their adventures include anything from camping trips to helping the elderly. In the 1941 recording, they assemble and later crash a šlapohyb, a five-seat quarter cycle. In another, they hunt for beavers, which in their world was an analogy to Boy Scouts' merit badges. The Rapid Arrows' very first adventure came out in 1938 in a magazine which itself was an invention of Jaroslav Foglar. By that time, a well-known Prague publishing house, Melantrich, had already put out two of his boys' novels. Jaroslav Foglar came up with an idea for a magazine that would not only provide entertainment for children, but also educate them. Václav Nosek is the author of a book about Jaroslav Foglar and his novels. He explains that the idea behind the Rapid Arrows was to inspire the magazine's readers to form their own clubs.
In September 1935, the Melantrich publishers started to publish this magazine called Little Herald. Foglar wrote articles for the publications and stories from the life of Boy Scouts. In its second year, the magazine changed its name to Young Herald, and that's where the idea to form readers' clubs first appeared.
At first, the idea did not catch on, but in a very short time, the number of clubs formed by readers of the Young Herald magazine became phenomenally successful.
The editors were very skeptical at the beginning, but in a matter of several issues, hundreds of such clubs were established, and soon there were 25,000 of them. It's true that many of them only existed briefly because they were just children's groups without any interference from adults, but some of them even survived the Nazi ban of the magazine, which came in 1941.
Practically single-handedly, Jaroslav Foglar created a massive, if loose, youth organization that was parallel to existing groups, primarily the Boy Scouts, which in the Czech environment existed since the early 20th century, and Foglar himself was a Boy Scout leader. Václav Nosek says many of the Rapid Arrows adventures were inspired by what happened in Jaroslav Foglar's real-life Boy Scout group. But Foglar's ambition was bigger than that.
He never made the Rapid Arrows part of the scouting movement. He wanted to offer all the good things he learned in Boy Scouts to the children. He was well aware that by the late 1930s there were some 60,000 boy and girl scouts, but he wanted to address all children. So he created his own system, which he offered to everybody.
The world of the Rapid Arrows is full of mysteries, adventures and opportunities to do good. The boys live in a town or a city, presumably Prague, where the author spent his entire life. They also go on trips to the country, where they never miss an opportunity to help others. The Rapid Arrow's nemesis is the Brotherhood of the Cat's Paw, an informal association of three willful, witless and sloppy boys, known as Longpole, Bristler and Bohosh. They always seek to outsmart and defeat the Rapid Arrows, but needless to say, always fail. Jaroslav Foglar's world, where it's fun to be good and where villains are ridiculous, might be too simple and naive for today's children. The Rapid Arrows' undisputed leader was Mirek Dushin, a boy who never lied or swore and was always a good friend. Václav Nosek says the author wanted a role model for his readers, someone they could imitate to improve themselves.
Many stories from the time were completely unrealistic. For instance, a 13-year-old boy flying a plane, or stories about boys in the Wild West. That was pure fantasy. But Mirek Dushin was different. He was almost too perfect, but children could learn from him. They could imitate his behavior.
Some of the characters were in fact named after real-life members of Jaroslav Foglar Boy Scout group. The most famous case is Jindra Hoyer, whom Foglar asked if he could use his name in the story.
And he said, "I have to ask my parents." His mother said there was no problem, as long as the character is a positive one. So he came back to Foglar, who told him, "Don't worry, he will certainly not embarrass you." So the character was based on a real person, but that naturally does not mean they were identical.
Jaroslav Foglar's Boy Scout group, as well as the whole movement, was banned in the 1940s by the Nazis, and again in the 1950s by the Communists. But under various names, the movement survived, just like Jaroslav Foglar's Rapid Arrows. During the Prague spring of 1968 and the few following years, new episodes of the comics appeared for the first time in 20 years. An audition was held to replace the comic's first illustrator, Jan Fischer. On the phone from his North Bohemian mountain refuge, Marko Čermák describes how he became the Rapid Arrow's new illustrator.
As a boy, I copied some of the Rapid Arrow's drawings, and Jaroslav Foglar insisted that it must be as close as possible to the original. My first attempt was not very successful, but the editors told me to try again, and I did, and Mr. Foglar liked it. But when I look back, it was not a great victory, because imitating someone else's style is not the sort of thing any artist would be proud of.
Marko Čermák illustrated some 40 episodes of the Rapid Arrows before they were once again banned in 1972. The comics came out in a magazine in Ostrava, whose editors probably knew that a ban might come at any time, so they wanted to make the most of it.
The editors wanted us to put in 20 episodes a month, which was terrible. I wasn't used to this kind of hectic work, and I could not adapt the comics to my own style. It was very stressful, but that was the deal. I think that if I had more time, I would have done a better job. So that was the most difficult part for me.
The liberalization of the late 1960s brought a renewed interest in Jaroslav Foglar and his work. He had by that time authored some 15 novels, including three featuring the Rapid Arrows. One of them was made into a TV series called The Mystery of the Conundrum. There, the five boys search for a long-lost mechanical puzzle called Hedgehog in the Cage, which contained plans for an invention of far-reaching consequences, the flying bicycle. In this and other novels featuring the Rapid Arrows as opposed to the comics, the boys set out on exciting trips to a dark, mysterious and inherently dangerous part of town. Jaroslav Foglar called this irresistible place Stínadla, which has a special ring to it in Czech. It's close to the word stín, or shadow, as well as to stínat, to decapitate.
Readers often wonder where the actual place was, and most of them believe the author was inspired by the unique atmosphere of Prague's old town. Václav Nosek again.
Foglar's scout group met in Helešovice, and he would walk home across the old town, so he knew all those little streets and alleys. So I think that's where he placed Stínadla, the area around Haštalské náměstí, the municipal courtyard. Some time ago, they even named a little street in the area Na Stínadlech. I think that must have been the area that inspired him.
Ale tam někde, dejme tomu, by mohli být ten předobraz těch stínadel.
Over the years, Jaroslav Foglar's comics and books have developed a cult following. The Rapid Arrows and other characters are sometimes mocked, but they retain an air of the world that's long gone. A complete edition of the comics has been published 7 times since 1998 and is all sold out, which proves how appealing the stories of the righteous Rapid Arrows are to this day. A píseň vonkým tiše zabrouká. Do stínadel se šerem vypravím. Snad potkám cestou losu, co já vím. Tu divá Kateřina urází.
This edition of Czech History was brought to you by Jan Richter. Thank you for that, Jan. We are now rounding off our regular weekday program with ABC, our Czech language learning program brought to you by Pavla Horáková.
Hello and welcome to a fresh edition of the ABC of Czech. I'm Pavla Horáková and today I'm joined in the studio by my colleague Vladimír Tax.
Dobrý den.
We've got as far as the letter P in the alphabet, which brings us to the topic of politics. The Czech word
politika
or politics comes from Greek, and although Czech politics may be complete Greek to you, we'll try and explain at least the vocabulary that goes with it. The word for politician is
politik.
That's for the masculine gender. Although men prevail in Czech politics, grammar provides female politicians with their own ending.
Politička.
Unless they are independent, politicians are members of political parties. The word for party is
strana.
And it features in most names of parties represented in the Czech parliament. The parliament in the Czech Republic has 2 houses. The lower house is
Poslanecká sněmovna,
or the Chamber of Deputies. And the upper house is
Senát,
or the Senate. The Czech language distinguishes male and female members of parliament. He is
poslanec,
and his female colleague is
poslankyně.
A senator,
senátor, senátorka,
that is either male or female, has to be over 40 to be eligible, whereas
poslanec, poslankyně,
have to be over 21 years of age. The government, or
vláda,
coming from the word
vládnout,
or to govern, currently has 17 members. It is headed by
předseda vlády,
or prime minister. The Czech word for minister sounds almost the same as in English,
ministr,
only it is spelled without the E. A woman minister is
ministrině.
Prague Castle, which is probably the most famous image of Prague, is the seat of the country's president. This word, too, sounds almost the same in English and in Czech.
Prezident.
Because his office is at the castle, which in Czech is
hrad,
sometimes this word alone can stand for the president and his political opinions. The expression
první dáma
is a literal translation of the English term the first lady. I guess that's enough politics for one day. But tune in again next if you can. Until then, bye-bye.
Naschledanou.
Pavla Horáková with ABC wrapped up Radio Prague's English show for today. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from myself, Sarah Borůvka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.